Hey, it's Bobby Manning, and welcome to another episode of Dome Theory Sports and Culture. Normally I have a lot to say in this opening segment, but we had a ton to say in the interview, conversation that we did today with my old friend Josue Pavone, my partner on the Garn Report, which is rolling full speed now that the Celtics season is going. So check out SteelNS Media for our coverage of the Celtics this year. Check out his podcast, Causeway Street, which covers the Celtics and the NBA. I've known Josue for about 3-4 years now, or maybe longer, probably going back five, six with CLNS Media and the postgame show that we've been doing together there. But Boston guy, Celtics reporter, going on a couple of years now, covers the team with Heavy.com and has been one of the faces here at CLNS Media. And I've loved covering the Celtics with him, but that's not what we're talking about today. We're talking Kid Cudi, two of our favorite artists. How do you say that? Sometimes English is confusing. He is our favorite artist. There we go. So Man on the Moon 3 drops out of nowhere. Man on the Moon is what started this guy's career, made him a bit of a folk legend in hip-hop, a revolutionary figure in the sound of the genre, and more than anything, a beloved figure to his fan base. Has one of the most diehard fan bases out there of any artist over the last 10 years or so. So you can imagine the third installment of the series that many of us thought wasn't going to happen, all of a sudden just being announced 2 weeks ago and then coming out this past week. It was a momentous occasion for Kid Cudi fans everywhere. The biggest thing with him is nostalgia, and we get into some of the criticisms of that nostalgia. People love Kid Cudi so much that there's a vocal opposition to him out there that tries to quell the hype a little bit, because he hasn't been the most critically reviewed successful artist in that sense over the last, especially 8 years since those two Man on the Moons came out. He's had some controversial albums that some people in his fan base have endeared themselves to, and critics have absolutely blasted, none more than Speedboat to Heaven in 2015. But 5 years later, he's back. He sounds at the top of his game vocally. This is an artist who's gone through mental health issues, which endears him to many of his fans with his openness and talking about them and addressing them and creating a musical landscape for people to cope through, which I think is what many people fell in love with him over 10 years ago. You'll read a lot of the same sentiments from his fans, going as far as to say that he saved their life. So the hype's real with him, and that's my point here in this podcast, that even though you may not connect with the hype, this is music in general, I guess, there's definitive, objective evidence that this guy's music has had an impact on people, just with the sheer volume of love that he's received and the sentiments that's shared by so many of his fans. So that's what we're doing here. Josue and I are talking about this new album, being Kid Cudi fans. If you listen to our last interview, which was 2018, I think, that we last talked on here, we discussed the time we both went to a concert in Boston and both met him that night, which was an incredible experience and honestly one of my favorite memories of my life so far. It was an incredibly emotional night, not just the concert, but you know, meeting someone, an artist especially, who has been so influential in your life. There's nothing like it. Hopefully I'll get to meet him again one day. Maybe talk to him, interview him. He had a great interview with Zane Lowe that beats this one just by a little bit, but I hope we kind of showcase what it's like to be that diehard Kid Cudi fan. And, you know, most people know who he is at this point, but if you don't, check him out. You might find some of his stuff enjoyable, and it's a diverse sound that he's put out there over the years. Some rock experimentation, pure hip-hop, alternative hip-hop, and on this new one, some more modern sounds, which was controversial. Travis Scott, the biggest, or one of the biggest hip-hop acts out there now, artists out there now, is but was highly influenced by Kid Cudi, Scott Mescudi. That's where the Scott and Travis Scott comes from. And Kid Cudi kind of turns back toward Travis Scott, who he's been working with in recent years, to reflect some of his sound and the kind of industrial is how I describe it, hip-hop that Travis Scott has put out there and mastered and popularized in recent years, industrial trap sound, per se. So we're going to get into this Man on the Moon album. The later stretches of this episode, we do one of my favorite things, comparing artists and basketball players, and a basketball player who has dubbed himself an artist in the last week or two, Kyrie Irving, who just continues to say things that rile up the media and fans and haters of his game. Like, he's just become one of the more divisive figures in all of basketball, and he's back to start this year doing a number of things that are driving fans crazy. This was before the Sage incident in Boston, so we didn't get into that, but I do think he's become a fascinating case that we're going to look back on and say, you know, what happened there to one of the most skilled guys we've ever seen play basketball? So we get into Kyrie Irving a little bit at the end, do a comparison for him. And that's it. Long interview today. I'm not going to go on too long here. Bobby Manning, Dome Theory. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, all that stuff. And here is Josue Pavone.
I love the fact that he talked about how he was like, man, people are going to think I'm some kind of fucking weirdo or whatever. Because I almost thought the same thing. Not that I thought he was a weirdo, but I was like, man, people are going to be like, this dude's mad depressing. The first song, he's like, I'm happy. That's the saddest lie. And it's like, fuck. Like, for people who don't know him, they're going to be like, oh, this dude's a bummer. But it wasn't, you know, that wasn't the majority of the reaction wasn't like that. I mean, again, you still have those fans that are just listening to Day and Night and they're like, oh, yeah, he's just for potheads or whatever. But then the other people who really listen to his album were like, no, he actually makes pretty good music. So at the time, when he first dropped his debut, he was a hit. He was a hit for sure. I just don't think people were like, oh, this guy's the future. They were just more like, oh, this guy's different. I like him. He's new. That kind of thing.
Well, I like that you bring up that point of him being a bummer, because you know what song really changed it for him with that was the last track on Man on the Moon 1. Now when the sun come up, I'll be there to say what up, in the morning.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great song.
Up and Away, that's what it was called. That song, yeah. Like, it kind of left the album on like more of like a cheerful, hopeful note. And this, there's always been some hopefulness to his music, even with how dark it's been. It's Gonna Be Okay on Man on the Moon 2 there.
Ghost, you know, like that. He always sort of ends it like that, you know, with that sort of like, it's a little dark, but it's going to be all right at the end. Yeah, that's true.
Speeding Bullet to Heaven, even his darkest album, had that I'm All Smiles.
Yeah, I love that song. That's probably my favorite song on the whole album. That's definitely my favorite song, actually.
Yeah, that was the title track, Speeding Bullet to Heaven. So I'll say, yeah, also to your point on the first album and the popularity of it at the time, I think Man on the Moon 3, what it does more than anything that alludes to those first two albums, which it doesn't do too much. It's a very different album than those first two. It's more like it in name than anything else. It does have that production style to it. Even if it's deep, even if it's subtle, like you have those synths moving in a way that kind of puts you in outer space. You have like that da-na-na on the first track there.
Going on a journey.
Yeah. Like that's what's still there. And it's the same people, Emil, Plain Pat, Dr. Genius, and Mike Dean. They're all there. They're all running the ship here. It's not much on Kid Cudi production wise. And they crafted that sound. I think what I pull from those first two albums still more than anything, through good track, through tracks that you didn't love as much, is that the production put you somewhere and made you feel something. And it was unique above anything else. Like no one, even after all these years, people have kind of descended off Kid Cudi, but no one has captured the sound quite the same way that he does continue to do.
Right. Especially when he's on features, like when he hops on other people's songs, I feel like people who aren't too crazy about him are like, oh, you know, that was a nice touch to the song. He adds that flair. And then it's like, listen to his music. And it's like, that's what it is all the time. But I think, you know, the diehard Cudi fans, it's like too over the top. I almost feel like they sell it too much. You know, it's like people are like, oh, okay. And then they go into it with like expectations through the roof, I feel like. And as years has gone on, you know, people are kind of just like, oh, all right. Yeah, this guy's still sort of a thing. But it's just like, you know, I like his songs here and there, but they don't really give the new stuff more of a chance. Whereas the hip hop community, I feel like, is more accepting. As opposed to like someone who's like, yeah, I kind of like this dude. I like Pursuit of Happiness and all that stuff. But like, you know, I'm not too crazy about it. But this album, he's got something for everyone. Like, I feel like you can go into this album and you can pick out a few tracks that you generally like because of the sound and because of the messages, which I think are still, you know, still ring true today, obviously. And you see him come full circle where he's been throughout the last 10 years.
So if I'm running through this track list, the songs that stand out, and there's a lot of tracks on here, 18. You mentioned this yesterday when we tried to do this episode, that there's a lot of songs on here. And we're still not at the point where I can pick out every one of these looking at the titles. But the ones that stick out to me, probably Elsa's Baby Boy. Not my favorite track on there, but that was more that Wizard Speeding Bullet to Heaven kind of track.
Yo, the ending, though, those last 40 seconds, that definitely has that vibe. And especially like right in the middle of the album where you're like, man, this journey's been crazy so far. Like, where are we going next? I'm down. Let's do it. Like, I definitely got that vibe for sure. Yeah.
Loving Me, such a great moment with Phoebe Bridgers, who I didn't know about coming into this album. I listened to her music, and I seen her on the top, you know, 50 list that everybody's dropping right now. And everyone's got her in, like, the top 5, 10, her album that came out earlier in the year. And I listened to it, and it's reflective of Cudi in a way. Like, it definitely has that vibe to it, a different genre, but someone who meshes well with him. And I thought I'd create a nice alternative track there. Tequila Shots, the opener.
That's your favorite. I know that.
That set a mood like no other. And the writing on there, especially, I thought the writing on the album overall was really good. Putting himself in this dark place, going down this awful road, which Tequila has been part of many times, as he's mentioned. And the line that stuck out to me most, and he's had kind of these harrowing lines throughout the years that really just kind of send chills down you, is tell my mom I'm sorry.
No, it's really telling. But I think it also shows that he's in a space now where he knows where those dark roads lead, and he knows that he's in a better place. And I think
that isn't that so obvious. Like, you watch the interviews, like, he's overall just in such a good place right now.
You just get that vibe, and you just know that he's progressing. And you look at where he was 4 years ago when he put out that message and he was going to check in the rehab for, you know, depression. It's like, man, you knew that he was in that rough space because of the album that he dropped. And then when he comes out, you know, Speeding Bullet comes out, and you're like, oh, okay. You know, or no, excuse me. I always get these two confused. Demon Slaying comes out, and you're like, all right, he's getting back in there. He sort of rapped it, but then, man, when Kitsy Ghost came out, and you just knew he was in that space where he could really create some bars, some hip hop that obviously has always been part of the Cudi sound, but in the last 5 years, you know, he sort of had one foot in, one foot out, and sort of always been exploring. And that's who he is. And I accept that. You know, I love that about Cudi, but there's just something about the music he's been putting out just now, and you couple it with Kitsy Ghost. Two completely different albums, right, Bobby? But two great bodies of work, of music, great albums that really exemplify who Cudi is, who he was, and who he is now. Like, sort of that transition to who he's evolved into, you know, who we see today.
Yeah. And if there's one criticism, I guess, you can take from that when we look at this album compared to Kitsy Ghost, Kitsy Ghost is a better album. I think you probably agree with that too. Like, that was just a phenomenal piece, and almost everybody agreed that was one of the 5-10 best albums of 2018, because it's so condensed. It's 7 tracks, 24 minutes, the best of the best. There's no extra fat here. Right. You're just straight to the point. And that's the Kanye influence. That's him overseeing it, executive producing it. I guess if you can criticize Cudi over the years, him as an executive producer, almost like a writer, being unwilling to cut off those extra paragraphs, being able to condense his work, and just that Passion Pain and Demon Slaying album was 88 minutes.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Like, that's a whole movie, which is okay. Yet, you know, that's always sort of the thing with Cudi. You're sort of going into another movie or another chapter of his life, but like, it was really redundant at some parts of that. Oh no, I forget. We talked about this the other time we tried to record, but it was some of those songs I felt like were redundant. And I love that sound, and I was hyped for the album, but I was like, man, this one, another 18 tracks, like, how long are these songs? But no, complete opposite. What, 3 minutes tops for most of these songs?
It's 58 minute album, yep.
Compared to when he used to say, you know, 420 at the end of the song because of the 420 minute mark of the song, or he'd be well over 5 minutes, and he's just like instrumentals for like 2.5 minutes to finish the song. You're like, all right, Cudi, wrap this one up. Like, yeah.
And Speeding Bullet to Heaven too, an album I liked more than most people. I thought it was a risky, bold attempt at doing something he really loved and was obviously inspired by, but the songs weren't justifying 5 minutes, 6 minutes, just drowning on and on forever. And the skits on there too.
He made it a double disc.
Yeah. Like, I got it right here.
You had the physical copy?
Yeah. Two discs.
Man, that was my, I remember telling people, I'm like, yo, not only is this like, at the time, you know, it's still today, if you ask me, I think this is his worst album, but
yeah,
it's like he made it two, he had the nerve to put 20 plus tracks worth of this, whereas, you know, he could have easily made that. Wait, hold on. Wait. No, that's the latest one, or are you talking about?
No, it's Speedboat to Heaven, yeah.
Okay. What, that's what the inside looks like? Oh, that's pretty cool, actually. Oh, all right. No, I see. I've never even seen the inside. So, but here's my thing with the album, though. Here's my thing. After going through it a bunch of times, because no matter what, it's a Kid Cudi album. I got to go through it. And you know, as time goes on, you figure out what you like. And I remember I put had a playlist down to about 9 songs of the best songs from both discs. And I listened to that a lot of, you know, repetitive throughout the summer that year. And it wasn't too bad. Some of those songs grew on me. But again, it was just way too much. Like, he had to trim the fat on that one.
He takes risk in ways that other artists who lean on one sound, who lean on just kind of like a crutch almost, aren't willing to do.
Right.
And when you take risks, sometimes it's going to blow up in your face. And that one obviously did. And he tweeted a couple years ago, I think it was 2018. Someone was talking about it on Twitter. And, you know, he kind of came out and said, like, it wasn't the most beloved album I've ever released, but I'm still proud of it and what I was able to do. And he said at that time in his life, he was struggling so much that he just kind of had to come out and scream over some instrumentals that he was playing. And
right.
That's the vibe.
And that was the biggest takeaway for me. It was like, not only is this album not great, but like Cudi's not okay. Like, this is the bottom of the, you know, we've seen him sort of spiral a bit, you know, Legend of Mr. Rager, he was living that life. And it was like, man, this is getting worse now. And it was like,
remember the first track on that album? It was like dreary, even for him.
Right. What are you talking about? Man on the Moon 2 or talking about?
On Speeding Boat to Heaven. Edge of the Earth, yeah, Postmortem, like, Boredom. Yeah.
Where are we going here? And then obviously he talks about the topic of suicide, but it was just the way he was talking about it. I was like, wait, you don't sing about it like this, though. This is sort of like, this is, you're making it sound like it's inevitable at this point. I mean, that's what made it even scarier. It's like the music wasn't great. It wasn't his best body of work, and he just wasn't in a great place. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pulling up the lyrics of that album. Hanging on the edge of the earth. Right. What a beautiful scene. What a beautiful ending to see.
Right.
Laying on a cliff, like, staring at the stars. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? I was into it. I'm like, all right, because the beat and everything, and then the intro, like the first couple songs aren't that bad. And then it spirals, man.
I like that intro track. Like, that was
a good song.
If that album had one thing, it was the bareness, the vulnerability of it. Like, cover your wounds, don't show your scars, smile from friends and carry on. Here's one more for the people lost in the sanity. Like,
that's a good song.
The writing was good on it, but it was inconsistent though. And it like it dragged on too long and it was full of itself. But you know, the cover art was cool. One of his better cover arts, I'd say. Yeah. So we get past that, like you said, Passion, Pain, Demon Slayer, nice comeback, but it drags on for too long itself. Great tracks like the Andre 3000 one on the front end.
He was getting back in the right direction. Like, okay, he's starting to sway towards, obviously, a little more back to hip-hop, less guitar, more bass. But also, I love the melodies in that album. And I was like,
oh, okay, it was so danceable. Remember Surfing?
Yeah. Surfing, I love Surfing. That was like a party track for me. I remember they used to play at the Garden a lot.
Yeah.
Some things, I don't know who loved that song, but it was always on a pregame playlist that entire season. And I want to say this past season, it was still, you hear something.
I'd be interested to see how many guys on there. This would be like an interesting story to pursue, but like the guys on the team right now are kind of around my age, your age. Like, there's definitely some Cudi fans on the team around the league.
Oh, Shemmy's one. You know what? I told him about Kids See Ghosts. He didn't even know about it. He said he listened to Reborn 4 times in a row one night.
Wow.
So that song is like, he's like, I'm obsessed with it, man. Like, that song was just like his go-to for a while.
And we went to that tour. That tour was pretty good. It was a short set down there in South Boston.
Yeah.
You bought my friend a beer, which I'll never forget.
I did. I didn't completely see that coming either. And I was like, all right, sure.
It's going to be like 2050 and he's still going to love you for that. That was a good show, but we went to that.
He owes me a beer next time I see him.
We were at that at the Speeding Boat to Heaven tour, which was outstanding. That album might not have been great, but that tour was phenomenal because you had the old tracks, the Speed in Both Heaven tracks were so good live because the instrumentation and everything, and you had other artists that back in the background, obviously handling some of the production of that show. The staging was incredible, and it was a long set. It was like 2.5 hours of him doing songs. And then, you know, you told us the whole story, you meeting him after. I met him after. Incredible moment. But yeah, so we're going to get into some of the backlash of this new album. This has been the thing with him over the years, is like he makes people like us so happy. And are we the most objective people in the world about his work? Probably not. Like we'll talk ourselves into anything he does. But on the other end of it, you got people who just kind of want to crash the party, it seems like, or I don't know, talk some sense into people. Like that Pitchfork review that came out this week, and it was such a great week until that came out. Like it was generally accepted as a pretty good album. I mean, social media was into it. People said it was a good moment. It kind of fit the bill for being a Man on the Moon 3. And then this Pitchfork review from Alphonse Pierre drops a 4.9, calling it the latest underwhelming installment of the rapper's cosmic album series, arrives 11 years after the original, and coasts on a legacy built a lifetime ago, which pretty much like doesn't even address the music all that much.
Right.
Just which says like
gets me to think that he had this opinion before he stopped.
Yeah, like it just says that
before he listened to it.
Like, yeah, it says the vibe, aesthetics, old fashioned, and people are living in the past and middle school memories. And
see, that's such okay. If he would have said that he's trying this new style and it's not working, okay, that's his opinion, which I would strongly disagree with. But okay, that's his opinion. But that's false. Like sure, there's 3 or 4 songs that you get that vibe where you feel like you could, you know, easily throw that on one of the older Cudi albums, but you also have a new sounding Cudi, right? Like, I feel like, yeah, Travis Scott may have influenced it as well, but at the same time, Cudi's made it his own. He's coined his own version of it, but then you have the Race tracks where it's completely Cudi with a new sound, that a new revamped modern day version of Cudi that you could race to, you know? Like, I felt like you got a good dose of that as well.
Yeah, I just don't get the purpose of this. And again, if you don't like the album, if you don't like the sounds he's getting into, I understand. I think he puts a good spin on some of these modern sounds that he's attempting, especially, we're gonna say it a million times, the Travis Scott influence, which is cool because if you have context, he inspired Travis Scott, and now it's him looking backward at Travis and pulling from him, and it's kind of a shared influence that they've had on each other.
You know what's a good example of that? I thought Damaged. What a great song, right? Damage, I feel like you could throw that on any, either one of the first two Man on the Moons, right? And people wouldn't believe, bat an eye. Oh, it must have been an add-on.
And so The Void for sure.
Oh, The Void for sure, yeah. But it has that sound, you know, the hook at least. But the beat is modern. Like, that's something that him and Travis has been cooking up, you know, those two. And I obviously cannot wait for that project to come out. But I'm so glad that you could tell he spent a lot of time on this one, because I was afraid that he was going to rush this one to get to the Travis project. But no, he spent a lot of time on it, as you can tell. And then for him to put it out in December was a gift. You know, I was afraid that was you could tell that's what he was rushing it. And I'm like, nope, he put it out in December and it's a banger, man. Like, honestly, like, what were some of the low points of this album? Or what were the ones that you could say that, okay, maybe that one couldn't have, you know, the album could do without it?
So the most divisive one's been the Pop Smoke Skepta track. And I liked it. I thought it was fun. I'm a Pop Smoke fan, but I'm not into that scene enough to say whether that represented a successful drill song or not. I think if you have a guy like Pop Smoke on there, and the backstory to this is that Pop Smoke was in the New York scene with Dr. Genius. They had a studio session. This was the beat that they were working with. And the song was kind of geared toward being one that worked with Kid Cudi. And then he obviously got killed a year ago or 2 years ago, however long ago it was now. And it ended up being repurposed into this kind of posthumous track here. Wasn't obviously done, a little incomplete as a posthumous track's gonna be. Skepta comes in to fill this bridge. And I thought it was fun, and I thought Kid Cudi kind of wrote on that beat. But if people are gonna rip that track and say that this isn't a good drill song, then fine, because I don't know enough about drill. I'm not from London, I'm not from New York. Like, I'm not in that scene enough to say if that was a... And it does kind of feel out of place on the album, if we're being honest. Like, it doesn't fit.
I thought the same thing. As soon as it dropped, I was just like, whoa, where are we going now? Yeah, that's true. But then when you hear the story behind it, it makes sense. Well, I liked it. I mean, yeah, I don't know.
I liked it too.
I don't know that much about that scene because I'm not too into it, but the fact that I like it, I'm like, okay, this is something that I shouldn't like, right? Like, I've never been a huge Skepta guy. You know, I've heard his features. I've never actually listened to like his whole project, but like, yeah, that sounds sort of not me, but the bass on that, man, the beat, I was into it, but yeah, it sort of felt out of place in a way, the flow of the album. But I think after that song, the Mr. Solo and Sad People, that might be my favorite back-to-back, second to the ending, pretty much. Like, I just think the way he paired some of these songs together, like, it made the album coast through so easy, such a smooth transition. And before you know it, the album's over, and you're like, man, that was great. Let me restart it. Like, that's the kind of feel that you know you listen to a great album where, like, you can't wait for it to restart, or you're so surprised that it went through so fast and you didn't have to skip a track.
Yeah, most people seem to like the second half of this better. And I definitely like The Void a ton. Loving Me went over so well. And that's probably one of his most condensed, to the point, punching tracks in years, that's just so focused and has great writing, great singing from both of them. I thought his singing on this album was exceptional. Probably as good as it's ever been.
Yeah, no, same. I think it's up there. Yeah, in terms of his best albums, I think it's up there. Just the way he, his hooks and his singing overall. What do you think about Rockstar Nights? That one grew on me, like, a little bit. Lately, it has been. At first, I was kind of like, it's all right.
I like the vibe of the track. I like what it's going for. I like the chemistry between them. Like, those guys just seem to love each other. I'm not a Trippie Redd fan, so it doesn't go over that well for me.
I'm not either. That's why I was kind of like, his verse isn't that bad, his hook, and, you know. But no, the one that I'm addicted to right now is The Pale Moonlight, man. The Pale Moonlight and Lord I Know. I just thought that Lord I Know is such a great way to wrap up the album. And I think it just, it goes perfectly with like the fans. It's like, I do this for you. And he puts it right after Kids. I mean, for the kids, like, it's just a great send off and a great check in to be like, hey, no matter what, like, we're all still going through it. And that's nothing too I hate about the review. It's like, it's almost as if I got the vibe where it's like, wait a minute now. Kid Cudi, you know, his first album dropped like over a decade ago. Is he still going through problems? It's just like, yo, what life do you lead? That's sort of the message I got from that review. It was like, Kid Cudi needs to get over this whole thing. Like, no one's into this anymore. But it's just like, no, life's still hard.
Which is objectively wrong. If you want to review an album and say, I don't like the sound on here, it wasn't very cohesive.
Tell me about the music itself. Exactly.
That's something that's subjective, that you can say someone can say an album's a zero, someone can say it's a 10, and you know, no one's right or wrong there. I think you can be wrong that this isn't having an impact on people anymore, that like the sound is worn thin, because you see the reaction on social media and in the fan base.
That's the whole point, man. Yeah. Kid Cudi's like, oh, we're going through this together, and the only difference is the 10 years ago I didn't know what I know now, but here's what I know now, and we're still going to go through this day. Like, I just love the entire themes and all that, because it's so Cudi, and it's like a modern version of it, where you're getting that music, that sound, that's 2020 as well. It's great. It's a great album, honestly. Like, I just think, even if I'm not a Cudi guy, it's just a great album.
So the editor genius tweeted out about that review, which obviously caused a stir, and said, like, he kind of gave some credence to it and said that, maybe those tweets about Kid Cudi saved my life got a little bit cliche. And I'm like, if a million people are saying it, then it's right. True. Right. Like,
dude, that's the thing. It's like, all right, you know, you're not into it, that's fine. But like, don't make it sound, don't knock the music now. You know what I mean? Like, he just dropped a gem. He just dropped a masterpiece. Like, I don't know. Let's get into this, Bobby. Where are we ranking this? I know it's too early, because you get a good sense of how great an album is. It's just like, time has to pass. It doesn't matter if you listen to it all day, every day. You just have to let it like marinate for, let's say, I don't know, a year. But like, where would you rank it? Because I don't know, man. I think it certainly cracks the top three.
I think it does too. I think you can firmly place this album above any of the other over the last decade. Indicud for sure. You know, that track had a few good singles. Didn't Come Together as a great album. Wizard for sure. I thought that was his worst album. Speaking Both to Heaven, certainly. We talked about Passion, Pain, and Demon Slaying. It's above that. I guess the only one that would come into competition with it is Kids See Ghosts, but that's kind of dual collaboration album.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking all his projects, yeah, I was just saying, I was thinking more of his solo project.
Yeah. See, I would, if we're putting together everything, I'd probably put Kids See Ghosts 2. That album is just so good. Condensed.
The first one. I think I do the same.
Yeah, over Man on the Moon 1. And I like Man on the Moon 2 the best still. It's tough to compare.
Favorite Kid Cudi album?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know that.
Mr. Rager, Ghost, the closing three tracks that you talked about. The first two tracks get off to a slow start, but the singles and the deep tracks on there come together in such a way that it runs the best start to finish for me. So that would be my one. I don't think you can put Man on the Moon 3 behind anything we've heard over the last decade solo-wise. It's honestly pretty easy.
Yeah. No, definitely. You know, when you get to that point where you're like, man, I can't stop listening to this album. I got to that point, probably like, I don't know, the handful of listens. And I was just like, do I dare put this next to the second one? But then I thought about it and I was like, songs like Ghosts and, you know, Rev of Ev, like, you know, there's just like three or four songs that like you can put up there as some of his best songs.
Mojo So Dope.
Right. Mojo So Dope. Oh, man, how could I forget? So like, but like just the overall flow of this album and like how cohesive it is, like I think that's what's gonna, in the end, that's what's gonna live on. You're gonna be like, yeah, just let that play. Like, it's just one of those albums you can just let play, and you're not skipping tracks here and there like you will with Indicud or his other projects.
Yeah, those first two are always going to be hard to beat. I don't think this lived up quite to those first two because those happened in such a time and such a level of hunger in his life.
Right, but I was surprised that I asked myself that question, Bob. I didn't think this album would be... I don't know what to expect, but I was just a little weary because of how quick the putting it out, you know, because the Eminem song wasn't on there. It wasn't like he had a single beforehand. And then he was talking about new music in 2021, and then... all of a sudden it's coming out in 5 days. So, but no, he put it together nicely though.
It came so fast and it did build on so much of what he did on Kids See Ghosts. I think of two moments on this album, the maniacal flow on the second half of She Knows This. And you mentioned Damage is kind of that modern track with a Cudi flair. She Knows This for me is like off the rails. The only song I can think of, and again, we go back to this Travis Scott thing, Sicko Mode. This is kind of Cudi's answer to Sicko Mode with the beat switch, with the rapid fire flow on the second half. And it's so dark, it's so maniacal. And when he gets in that zone flow wise, he's actually a pretty damn good rapper. Like we think of him as being great for the versatility, but when he dives in, he can really rap.
Right. And then it's just like his own flow. Like it's like a way, a style that no one else can duplicate and sounds great the way he does it. Another song, Heaven on Earth, man. And that comes out right after. Again, like some of these songs, the way they go back to back like that, that's what makes it such a smooth listen. And those are the parts of the album I'm like, man, he's really digging in now. I thought that sort of, you know what? He had two songs on Indica that were like that. Was it Burn Baby Burn? And the other one where he's just like flowing just off the top, like, or seemed like that way, like almost like that freestyle flow to it. And you had that same message being like, man, I'm going to show everyone that I still got it. I'm going through it, but I know how to do it now. Like, I just love all that, man. It's just Kid Cudi exemplifies that. And the more you listen to it, the more you really listen to what he's saying, I feel like, especially, like, you just get into what he's saying and you know, like, exactly what he's been through because he's shown it to you. He's been so honest. Like, he's been so transparent.
Cold-Blooded was the track on there that stuck out for me in that way on Indicud.
Which one was it?
Cold-Blooded.
Yeah. Cold Blood at the end. That's the last one. Yeah.
One of the last tracks on there.
Before the big song, yeah.
And then that was kind of around the time he had the falling out with Good Music and he was trying to push to do his own thing. And that's what hurt him, I think. If we think about what he's doing here the last few years, he did get back to his bread and butter. Like, it's a different way of doing it, but we think of Reborn, which is probably his most successful track of the last 5 years. And... you know, when we think of this album, like The Void and some of those like quintessential Cudi tracks are still what you like most about him. It's great to see him experiment. It's great to see him try new things and push boundaries and all those. You know, Free on Kids See Ghosts is certainly an album that pushes boundaries a little bit. But you still think of those quintessential Cudi tracks are what like he gets back to with the producers he was successful early on in his career with. And you know, I didn't think we were going to get a Man on the Moon 3, but like for him to get to that, like shows the place he's at where he's focused, he's on a mission and he's trying to deliver what fans have been waiting for a long time.
And it wasn't one of those albums where he just slapped the name on it. It feels like a Man on the Moon. Yeah. You know, it has that feel to it.
That's what he said.
I like how he's trying that because I think it's going to generate a new fan base. You know? Like, been 10 years since the first one. Like, it's crazy, or over 10 years. And now you see this new crowd or new wave of fans, new fans that are just now getting into Kid Cudi, or at least the deep cuts in the way it is nowadays, where it's just at your fingertips, you can stream. And you think of, yeah, this is Travis Scott influence, but I also think Cudi's created his own, like, this new generation, man, just for everyone to sort of vibe with. It's the same message, the same motto, and that's what would have messed up everything, right? If he was talking about something completely different, and if he took his approach changed, but he didn't, you know. And that sound and those feels, man. But what if your close circles have said though? What are your friends?
So, I think they've generally liked it, which is fair. Like, they don't think it's amazing. They don't think it's bad. So I can always accept that. We're going to go crazier than most people over something like this.
Why'd you go crazy about it most? Like, be honest. Like, because with me, man, again, there was like the journey, and it was just like him taking me through, like, almost like we went back to like 09 and stuff, and like those sort of feelings.
And it's so funny because that's what the review is ripping us for. Like,
it's like, what, man? Like, years ago, I was a kid. I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. Now I'm here. Like, You relate in your own way, whether it's, you know, oh man, I could talk all night about this stuff, man, but you get what I'm saying? Like, those themes where it's like, man, I don't know if I'm good enough one day, but the next day you're like, no, I can take on the world. And it's just like that weaving through those emotions that you see Cudi go through in this album.
It's something to lean on in the tough times. And
especially in 2020, man. Yeah.
And that's another contextual thing that helps it too. It ended this awful year for a lot of people with some hope, with something to, you know, lean on and help them through a moment. And when I think back to Man on the Moon 2, Man on the Moon 1, and so many people can relate to this, it was hard times, middle school into high school, uncertainty in your life, maybe not having the most, you know, successful social life at that time, or, you know, school was getting you down, or, you know, just kind of life in general was tiring you down, wearing you down. You had some issues with a girl or something that you did, you liked and didn't get it. Right. It gave you something to lean on in those times. And for a lot of people, those times going through middle school, going through high school, and the confidence issues and those things that hit you around those times can be some of the hardest moments of your life. And to have something as powerful and relatable and speaking to you in that way of those times is like, there really is something so powerful that. So you listen to it, you're taken back to that time, you're hearing the sounds of that era in a new way, where we've both grown up, we've both gone past those moments like Cudi has at this point. And it's sort of like you're following this timeline with him. That, you know, we've both gotten a pretty good points in our life. We're both kind of living our dream, covering basketball, you know, doing shows here. Just like, you know, this is always what we envisioned ourselves doing. And this album for Cudi, it's going to be his most successful album ever. And why is that? Like, it's a victory lap of sorts. Like, we got through it. We made it to this point. So many people have been influenced by this. And now this is going to be a celebratory week for us. And this is what it felt like. Like, that night where it dropped, everybody was just like, boom, headphones on, we're doing this. And then the whole week after, until the stupid review, was all celebration, was all good feeling.
And even let's take the review, because that way we can make fun of it the way we are right now. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And like, people who've reviewed him tough in the past had good reviews for this. So I think the consensus was that it was, what did your friends think? What did Sean and all of them think about it?
Oh, they love it. And I wasn't quite sure, because I was just like, it's kind of emotional, it's kind of deep. But then, you know, the cuts, the party, the upbeat ones, I'm like, they'll probably love that one. Sean went crazy about it. And most of my friends are like, yeah, it's not bad. You know, Kid Cudi's, you know, I almost felt like it wasn't him at first, you know, or at least parts of the album. They're like, man, it almost didn't sound like him. I'm like, oh no, it's all him. So it was good, man. And I just think Kid Cudi, again, he just speaks to that crowd of people who've always followed him for the last, you know, over a decade. But now there's a space for new listeners, man, new followers. But yeah, man, I just thought those vibes were there when he takes you back to being that kid. I mean, that song started growing me more, the LC's Boy. But again, those last 45 seconds, I think my childhood flashed before my eyes, man. Like, it just has that feel to it. It's like you're going back in time and you're thinking, like, you know, when you were not quite sure about yourself, or maybe you're you know, you didn't do great in school. And I just think Cudi, you know those stories, you know him, you know, because of those stories that he told you in the first album. And then now you know where he is now. You think about where you are now. And that's what it is, you know, with Cudi fans, like that relatability. It's like, I'm with you and the ups and downs. And then, you know, when you're raging in that stage of your life, like it's the way Kid Cudi was, because you weren't quite sure. It's like, okay, this guy feels the same way I do, you know, or he's been through it, or he's in a space where I was or used to be. So yeah, man, it's great. It's just another chapter to an amazing career for Cudi, for sure. This album.
And it's just the start of like a second prime for him, almost, it could be. Like, it feels like new music.
That after Kids See Ghosts, man. Like, I was like, yo, he just blew Kanye West out of the water. Like, give me more. 7 tracks, damn it. Like, I know you recorded at least 2 more. Like, put those out. I need bonus tracks. Like, man, that album was incredible. Because one, he was rapping. 2, you knew he was in a great space. And then the hooks. 3, you know, the hums and everything. I was like, whoa, wait a minute. This is like a new version of him. But then you're like, the Kanye beats, I'm like, you're not gonna have that in this new one. So I don't know if he's gonna have the same sort of, but man, the beats, he went back to the day ones, man. Playing Pat, what up? Remember that drop he's always play? Yeah, man.
Yeah, so this is his number 2 release behind Taylor Swift, because that came out the same day. The Scott.
Why did she have to drop an album this week?
Damn it. It could have been his first number 1 album. The Scots, number 1 Billboard hit. That was the first of his career.
That was his first, yeah.
So this has just been a massive, massive year for him, sale-wise, popularity-wise. Who knows? He could maybe even get a Grammy nomination next year for an album for the first time. I think it would be so amazing. I'm so
mad at Grammys, man. You know why I'm mad at them, right?
Why is that?
Mac, bro. Come on. But we won't get into it. That's another episode.
Well, we're going to do some end of the year stuff next week with my man, Mel Smith, who I usually talk music with around here on the Bobcast, Dome Theory. Appreciate Joe Sway being by. What were some of your favorite stuff otherwise this year? Mac, of course. That was an album that was just on replay forever. Probably the best
of
his career. I mean, we've talked about that at length on here. But what else stuck out to you this year?
Man, Jay Electronica. That I don't think I'll forget that day, because obviously no one knows Jay's on it. I'm like, oh, okay, he's, you know, intro. That makes sense. Oh, okay.
It was almost a collaboration album.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, he's getting him started. And I'm like, oh, this is a whole album. This is literally the day after the NBA just announced that the, you know, COVID-19 season suspended. I'm walking outside, I listen to this in my headphones, like, it looks like the world's about to end. So it was that whole vibe where the world was at that time, the way Jay comes in swinging in that first track. Yeah, I, that one's up there for me for sure. That, Mac. Big Sean, I was crazy about for like a week, and then that grew off of me, man. I don't know what happened there. What do you think about that one?
A little bloated, a little overdone.
Yeah, but there's like 5 songs I was really into, and then it didn't have much replay value, obviously, I guess.
He's like a workout artist for me, where he just makes these nice, inspiring tracks. I think he's a good rapper, which matters to me. But I don't connect on it on a very high level. And outside of his 3rd and 4th albums there, the ones that are widely considered to be his best after the first two, he hasn't overall done it for me. I don't love his first 2 albums. I haven't loved the stuff since The Light and all that stuff came out. So, you know, it was good. There were some good moments on there. I think he's good. You know, I don't have any problem with his style, or he's just not my favorite. You know, he's a good rapper.
Right. No, I've always felt like that too. I like his music, but I'm just like, when's he gonna take it to the next level? I thought this was it, but.
Yeah, and he was close. I always say that. Like, there was a time where Drake was rolling in 2014-15. Kendrick, obviously, around that time. And Big Sean was getting rolling in a way that made you think he could leap to that next level. But he was doing Drake things at a rate that wasn't as high and prolific as Drake. So if you're doing that around that time, you kind of were going to get washed to the side.
Yeah. No, definitely. Who else? I'm talking about 2020, right?
Yeah. Freddie Gibbs was one of my favorite for sure.
Freddie wasn't bad. That wasn't bad. What's the one that dropped a couple months ago? He dropped 2 albums this year. What's his name? I'm drawing a blank. I want to go check my title.
West Side Gun?
No.
Who had 2 albums this year?
He's from New York. New York guy. Damn it. I'm forgetting his name. I'll get back to you. Who else dropped an album this year? There wasn't a whole lot of great out. Well, there were like these EPs that I liked. Vic wasn't that bad.
He had a good comeback year. I'd say he was comeback artist of the year.
Dirt on My Name was a great song. Mm-hmm. Great song. The EP wasn't bad. It was. I don't know if I like that one better than the one you dropped before that. Not the rock one. The one it was like a couple years ago, I think.
Yeah, that was. I got that one on vinyl. That was an excellent debut for him. Another guy who's gone through a lot of troubles, and it's good to see him seemingly doing well again. I just seen he did a homeless sleepout in Chicago for homeless awareness. He slept outside all night. Always doing charitable stuff. I mean, he's been on the Black Lives Matter ride like from day one. So yeah. that's a guy I've always had respect for, always enjoyed.
He puts it on wax too, which is great. He's always been talking about it. Yeah.
So it was a good year, I thought. Overall, I thought it was outstanding. The Weeknd had his best album ever, I thought.
And then he got robbed by the Grammys. Man.
We're going to talk a lot about that next week.
You got to put him in like a category. You can't just cast him out, man.
You know what's so weird about that? And it's seemingly obvious because he had to do the Super Bowl or the Grammys.
But
and
that's he chose not fair. The Super Bowl. That's not fair. Like, I don't think that should be that. That's up to him. Like, I don't think because a lot of people that's the only logical explanation.
That's a conspiracy. If you get realistic about it, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of voters, and I just can't imagine how when you think of what they prioritize, which is like sales, pop appeal, influence, like it had all of that. It was the biggest album ever. It's like you could make an argument that this was the biggest album ever sales wise. It was on the Billboard top 10 for more weeks than any album in Billboard history.
Number one song too. Yeah, no question. Especially 2020.
Blinding Lights was probably the song of the year.
I think he broke a record with that. Mm-hmm. It was like still number one during a pandemic.
That album was special in a way that like you enjoyed it. Even though it kind of had that mass appeal, like normally songs that are on the radio all the time and everybody knows about and sell at that level don't have an appeal. But that was like a quintessential Weeknd album. It had that Weeknd appeal to it with some of those bigger pop tracks, mainstream successes. Like it kind of hit the best of both worlds somehow in a way that, you know, I don't think was fully appreciated this year, but I think we're still going to look back on that album in 10-20 years as like essential music for the start of this decade.
Yeah, definitely for sure. I just wonder what he's gonna come up with next time.
I don't know, he's been inconsistent with some of his releases since his mixtape days.
You missed those days, the R&B, the old
I wasn't into it at the time. I've gone back into it as he's gotten more popular, and you see the influence that it's had on R&B, you know, kind of more melodic, druggy, you know, heartsick music that has like a, you know, synth hip hop appeal to it. So he's been massively influential, and you think of what he's done for Drake's career, going back to that Take Care album.
Oh, he's influenced an entire generation, man. It's like, it's crazy.
Yeah, he's going to go down as probably one of the three most important artists of our generation, probably. You think it's going to be Drake, Kendrick Lamar from a rap perspective, without a doubt. And then from that R&B lane, I don't think anyone's been more successful in R&B over the last decade or two than The Weeknd.
I'm interested to see what's going to happen with Drake with this album, because I feel like, I don't, and correct me if I'm wrong, man, the last couple albums, like Scorpion, I mean, I don't think it should have been double disc or whatever, but, and then to come now, like,
the demo tracks was his worst album ever. And I don't know why he's doing this thing now where he kind of lowers the expectations coming in. It's like what Brad Stevens is doing right now with Aaron Naismith. Like,
it really is. Yeah, you're right.
He'll
make sure that he has a number one radio hit, or at least two of them. But it's like, yo, what I loved about Drake was that he gave you a great body of work. Like those first three albums, you know, like I just feel like it's just been declining, and then it'll go up a little bit one album and then decline the last one. Like, I'm just like, I almost forgot about that album because I went through it, what, 3, 4, 5 times. It just never grew on me, you know?
What can we say? His whole thing is I got more slaps than the Beatles. Like, the singles are good. He's had some legendary singles, to be certain. Hold On, We're Going Home. I love the Lauryn Hill sample that he threw out there on that Scorpion album. I can't think of the track's name.
I just want to I want another Take Care album or something like that, something close to that. We get that nice blend of the R&B with the hip hop, the club. You can play it in the club, and then it's just smooth. You can let the thing play through. Like, that's Drake to me. Like, to me, that's him at his best. He's doing a little bit of both.
Well, let's consider this. Kid Cudi absolutely made the better drill album than Drake ever would, or the better drill song, rather.
Yeah, but I just feel like it's like you get full singing for like five tracks in a row. You might get a couple like the Jay-Z cut. Like, that's a great cut, you know, on the Scorpion album. And I think one half of it was more hip hop. I think that was the one. And like, I don't know. I just think he gets a little lazier now with the raps. I think he puts more emphasis on the singing, whereas the raps used to be hard, man. The bars used to come harder, I feel.
Well, he's a strong singer, and that was a good choice he made early on, was that I'm going to lean on my singing because it's a strength of mine. I'm not the best rapper in the world, but there's an acceptance out here for singing. I can kind of fuse R&B and rap sounds, because those were always separate in the 2000s. You know, you have
right, kind now of your... It's like he's on a feature, you know? When he really goes off, it's not his song, you know? When he's rapping, I feel like.
Yeah, I have Sicko Mode was one of his best moments of the last 10 years. Yeah.
Well, I guess technically it's his song, but you know.
No, that was Travis' song.
Life is Good. No, I'm saying Life is Good. Like, another example, like, it's like if someone's with him, or it's like he gets into this new space and it's like, okay, that's the Dre. You know, like, he's just like.
Well, he does have a sound. Like, believe it or not, he does have a sound, and that song's it. He doesn't lean on it much anymore. He's always trying new things or trying to ride on some waves. We all know the story with Drake at this point. Like, we're not saying stuff people don't know at this point about him.
See, but just be you, man. Like, Cudi's always him. It might be out there, but he's going to experiment. He's going to come back to where he is. Put it this way. If he doesn't go out and make those albums, do you get Kids See Ghosts, or do you get Man on the Moon 3? I don't know. I don't know if he's going to be in the same creative space.
Well, you know what's so interesting is you look back on that time where 808s and Heartbreak came out, an album that definitely inspired both of them. Kid Cudi had a chance to be Drake. A slight chance. I don't think he ever would have reached that point.
Oh, facts, bro. No, you're pretty much saying what I'm saying, but in a different way. Like, yeah, he could have chose that route.
Because let's think, 2010, I mean, they were both getting started at the same time. And right. Thank Me Later, Man on the Moon 1. I mean, that's not even a discussion. And then, you know, Take Care, Man on the Moon 2, probably, you know, fairly comparable albums. Take Care beats it out, but, like, you know, Man on the Moon.
What was the big difference about those two, though? Like, I think at that time, it was sort of cool to be emotional and talk about your feelings, but they made it sound really cool. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like they sort of put that at the forefront, where, like, being vulnerable and sharing your, but also being like, yeah, I'm also the man. I got swag. I'm swag to death. But hey, at night, you know, I think about stuff. Like, I feel like they both epitomized that. But they both went like two different directions. But Cudi could have easily done the same, you know?
Well, Cudi just, I mean, he left the label. He started producing everything. He got so experimental that he never had a chance. So, you know, doesn't really matter, but it's just something to think about. It's a what if.
But you would have gotten like a watered down Kid Cudi, you know? Whereas, I mean, is this a watered down Drake? I don't know. I'm not quite sure if Drake and Cudi are like in the same sort of art. I mean, they're not. They're very different artists, but they're sort of similar in that sense, though. It's interesting. Like, it's a fascinating discussion. If Cudi's, you know, stays with Kanye the way he stayed with Wayne just in the beginning, right? First couple albums, and then, I don't know.
Well, could Cudi have handled that level of success and what came with it, given you know, some of the stuff he was going through when he started his career? I don't know. Maybe some of the more experimental stuff ended up being therapeutic for him. I mean, you definitely get the sense, especially with Mac Miller dying in the last year. Like, more than anything, you're just happy to still have Kid Cudi around at this point, given what he's gone through. And, like, that's another thing that added to some of the emotion of that Man on the Moon 3, because it's like, when Man on the Moon 2 came out, and he said this himself, who knows if I'd be here much longer past this.
Yeah. No, definitely. And especially at that time where I feel like, I don't know if he was sort of like, I don't know if I fit. I think he was like, I don't know if I fit in with these guys, because the whole Good Friday thing, I think he was on like a couple of songs, but he didn't have a whole lot of time. Pusha was working a lot with Kanye. At that time, he's like, what's next for me? Like, what's my sound going to be like? And I think that sort of had a lot to do with him leaving Good. I don't think it was more as like, oh, I need to get away from Kanye and do my own thing. It was more like, you guys have your own thing going on here. I'm going to, you know, venture off on my own. And I think that's when it got really dark, because of what was going on in his life. And he talked about it in the Low interview about, you know, being a father and not sure if he's going to be, if he's in a good space to take care of himself, let alone bringing a girl into the world. So,
So great. His acting career is on fire. He looks happy. You see the smile on his face. People are sending him so much positive feedback, and he's able to give that back out. Like, this was a celebration week in so many ways. So, you know, who cares about the reviews? Who cares how we look back on this? Like, it was a week of celebration, no matter how we end up looking back on this album in 10 years. Probably not going to look back on it as anything legendary, but it was good. It was enjoyable, and it threw back to an era, which I think is what music does. You know, it takes you back to someplace. You know, when you look back on it in 5-10 years, you remember what you were doing at that time. And I always love that. Something I always ask on this too, I wonder if you have an answer for this, because I was thinking about it all day and I really couldn't come up with a perfect comparison. Who's the Kid Cudi of the NBA?
Oh man, that's a good one. Because it has to be someone sort of keeps to himself, sort of has their own motto, but like, I don't know, man. I have to get back to you on that.
I'm thinking of, so I couldn't think of necessarily someone who's had an impact like that, who got a ton of vitriol. Maybe like a Lou Williams or someone who like had that level of allure. Jamal Crawford even, who, you know, is like a six man who kind of embodied a play style, who people love, but people know isn't like the greatest artist in the world. There's someone that you would look
at. But they have that following where that people they idolize their game after. Yeah.
Jamal Crawford could be that guy. I also look back on it as someone like, let's say Carmelo, you know, first year comes in with a ton of hype. Has a great career. I mean, we're looking at Kid Cudi say there was a Rap Hall of Fame. I mean, he would be a Rap Hall of Famer. But you look back on some of the inconsistencies over the years, and he never won the ring, per se. You know, Cudi never had the number one album, you could say. So Carmelo could fit that bill, too. I guess the third angle I could take on is someone in the game who people respect, probably more than the average fan respects. And I take that to Avery Bradley. You know, Avery Bradley was never an all-star. Probably not a good enough player to meet Cudi's standard, because I think people would say Cudi was a better artist than Bradley was a player, and I think almost everyone would agree about that. But I pick Bradley because other players respected him and his defense and the way he approached the game more than anybody, it felt like. Like, people would always say Bradley's the best perimeter defender in the league, just like people would say Cudi inspired a whole entire generation. But I think your Melo is
spot on, Bobby. Now that I think about it, the more and more I think about it, you know why?
Because he gets maligned.
The Renaissance year, oh no, he can't, you know, he's done. And then boom, now he's back. It's like, oh, you got, and then you know what else too? The fan base. You can't tell Melo fans shit. Like, they will defend that guy forever. If, you know, Hall of Fame conversation comes up, like, there's nothing he can do. He can do no wrong. Same thing with Cudi fans. I think that's the one.
We're going to write that.
People are going to be like, oh, actually, it's kind of ridiculous, but maybe some people be like, is Melo in the Hall of Fame? Or something along those lines. Yeah, he's in the Hall of Fame, but, you know, they'll put an asterisk. I think that's sort of, people say that about Kid Cudi. Like, yeah, he influenced a generation, but, you know, it was just this one group of people who were obsessed with him. You know, I think that fan base, that bodes well with Melo for sure.
You know who I said Gordon Hayward was? This is a good one. Logic.
Yeah, that's perfect. That is perfect. But what's the cop out though? Because the injuries for Hayward to him would be what? He doesn't care about being commercial success or whatever. I don't know. What a diehard Logic fan say?
That's a good question. I don't know what
that would be. Something along those lines that like he doesn't want to sell out, or like he could sell out if he wanted to, but he's true to his brain.
I guess the lineage would be it, because his first two albums were excellent, just like Hayward's Utah track record was impeccable. Right. He gets better every single year. He gets
his all-star years with the mixtapes, right?
Mm-hmm. So he goes to the mixtapes. The first two albums were good. Then he just gets so big. I guess he gets that big contract in Boston with just like everybody with Logic, where it just kind of got too big and bloated and he was trying to do too much. Whereas, you know, you can't really like compare an injury to anything musically. But, you know, once it got big, the expectations grew through the roof, and he didn't meet them as well with those last few albums. That album Logic had this year, which was, you know, for mentioning favorite, which I guess is his last album.
That's what he said, right?
Victory,
he's
victory lap in its own right. I thought that was one of the best albums. And Cudi had situations this year back to like their original sound, did something that their fans love.
Yeah, who's Chance the Rapper? Yeah, I got it. This is fun. Who's Chance the Rapper in the NBA? Well, he's not in the NBA anymore, but you're not going to get this one. Maybe.
When did he leave?
Someone who like peaked really early and then unfortunately it was injuries. I'm not saying Chance is injured right now, but that last album, you know, people kind of like, is he going to come back swinging again? Did he peak early?
I was thinking
Brandon Roy.
That's who I was thinking. I didn't name it. No.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Oh man, you just said it.
I should have said it.
You remember Brandon Roy? But Brandon Roy was
he was Damian Lillard before Damian Lillard.
Exactly. Like literally. Like I'm not even because he played for Portland. Like literally, his game. Like those ballsy like stepaways where it wasn't like. Well, he does now because it's Steph Land is he created that, but. Back then, it was not quite Steph Land, but almost Steph Land, and it was the unthinkable in those years. It was like, you don't shoot from back there. Like, it was ridiculous. He could move off the ball. He could do anything he wanted. Like, he couldn't keep – defenders couldn't stay in front of him. So, yeah. Because Chance, that acid rap, man, that'll go down. Like that era will go down in history.
And so, then, you see, this is
– the album.
This is what makes that comparison tricky. Injuries are so impossible that I guess you could say like, I don't know, going to jail or substance abuse issues or something on the artist side. I don't know where you would compare it to the level of, I don't know if it's arrogance or just kind of too much success too early for Chance that seemingly impacted what he's been doing the last 2 years. There was a story that came out in a smaller publication. You know, I wish I could give them credit off the top here, but it was a smaller publication wrote that, so Chance dropped his manager in the last year or so leading up to the big day release that he had last year. And the manager had apparently warned him that he was doing this too fast. I guess the album was recorded over 2 months hastily without much feedback from the manager or anyone else. It was just kind of his family operation going on. And they ended up firing the manager, Chance, and his family because the tour flopped. If you remember, they were doing a tour for the big day.
It was selling, right?
Yeah, because people hated the album. It was a garbage album.
Yeah.
Oh my God, yeah. It was terrible.
And I was so excited for when it came out, man.
It was looking like it was going to, I mean, he had the victory lap with Coloring Book of coming off those mixtapes. And I thought that was his debut album, but then he's like, this is my debut album. And it was just horrendous. I mean, TikTok music and just awful lyrics front to back and the features made no sense. It was one of the worst albums with the anticipation that I've ever heard.
And it just got worse and worse, man. I listened to like 3 times. Like, this album is bad.
Usually there's one song that you can be like, all right, I'm walking away with this song, even though it's a bad album. That one did not.
Hey, five-year plan was all right. That was it. I think 5-year plan. And then
he still has moments.
The one with Nicki I liked for a little bit. And then I was like, this is terrible.
So the manager sued because he got fired.
I thought it was good for a little bit. Then I was like, no, this is terrible.
So apparently there's a battle between Chance's camp and the manager over the blame game over that album. But you hear the manager's side of the story that this was thrown together too fast. He was getting married at the time Chance was. And so it just wasn't a formula for success and expectations that he was setting out there for the fans. And the manager basically said, you put out a product that was inducive to fans not showing up to a tour. I think he's in a good case. I don't know how that holds up legally, but it kind of sets the scene of what he did and just how he probably got too big too fast. I mean, how old is he at this point? He's not that old.
Yeah, I also think the pressure was on too, right? Because it was like, well, how are you going to follow this up? Like, what direction are you going to go in, right?
I don't know, because he followed up Acid Rap, which already had big expectations.
I feel like this was the first, like, and I know he's not on a major label, but it was just like his first, like, he was all over the radio, you know, like that album after Acid Rap, I feel like was like, you have to follow that up with a different, almost like a different sound, but it was like, which way are you going to go? I was thinking about The Weeknd after he dropped his first album, like, are you going to go more pop or are you going to keep the hip hop thing going? And I felt like he was sort of stuck in that place and like, he was sort of trying to create like this new sound. And it just didn't work out. And maybe that was it. Maybe they just rushed it and he didn't get enough opinion on it. And he just thought it was better than it actually was. But I also think that he was obsessed with like having it come out close to when he got married, which I don't understand why like that was so important to him. But yeah, I just don't know where he's gonna go from here. I feel like, you know, I'm thinking of like, if he goes more hip hop, you know, is he gonna have more bars? I feel like he's gonna most likely go more towards the singing route, you know.
Well, he's been memeified too with the whole "I love my wife" thing, and that's gonna be so hard for him to get past. Which is another fault of that album. Like, there was a way to go at that topic and make it interesting and kind of go back on his infidelities and the issues that he's had with his relationship and the coming to go. Like, there was a formula for success there for a great album with the changes that he had made in his life and the kids that he had. And I guess he did that to some degree on Coloring Book. And his religion certainly too has been an interesting topic in the past. Like, he had things to work with there, but it just came out so flat and bland and underdone, and the lyrics were so horrible. I mean, you will go back and look on the lyrics on that album. It was just like, what's going on here? Like, it was like Drake minus the ghostwriters.
When we had all that extra time on our hands, I remember I did it and I didn't say anything to Sean about it, but then Sean texted me and just goes, you know, with so much time on my hands, I decided to revisit the Chance album. Yep, still sucks. Yeah. Did the same thing last week. I was like, let me give this another go. Because you know what I did? I grabbed the song that I like the most, and I made my own playlist like months ago when the album just dropped. So I was like, let me go back to that playlist. I'm not going to hear the whole album again. And even that playlist, I'm like, this is brutal, man. I can't listen to this.
Do we go Kyrie there?
Could be. That could be a good one. But if Kyrie is, you know.
We did the whole Kyrie.
Up until this point, I think it's perfect because we don't know what's going to happen. Where the success is going to happen or not.
See, we said Kanye in the group chat last week, and it doesn't fit. Like, Kyrie did not do anything early. He won a championship, and he became a global icon and all that. I don't know if the body of work met what Kanye was doing, because Kanye put together probably the best.
I look at it more as just like his mouth. You know? He's just like
this. Oh, it can be a mix of a few people for doing a comparison, but I don't know. Did Kyrie get too big too fast off that championship and think that he could do it alone? And when he Boston 2019 can be his big day.
Sometimes I feel like, man, Kyrie doesn't know what he really, really wants to do. I don't know. Like, I obviously think he has fun playing basketball, but I'm like, can you not sleep at night thinking about championship? Like, and I'm not questioning like his heart, because I think he gives it all he has when he's on the court. But sometimes I wonder if like it's like not quite sure like Brooklyn is the thing. Like, it's like, okay, first you want to get away from LeBron, then it's like, oh, I want to bring a championship to Boston, you know. And then it's like, oh, I want to go back home. It's like, you really want to do these things, or is it just like next year gonna be a new thing, you know?
This is what makes me so uncomfortable about this whole Kyrie thing. And we've addressed it like crazy on the show. We've talked about it on Twitter. I mean, we covered him for a couple of years here. The media at large and social media and TV shows and everything else just lambast him in this way that's probably deserved, because he has brought vitriol toward himself, and I think he's been a shaky teammate, and he's brought criticism on himself. I think it's earned, and I don't think he's above criticism. So when we think of him not doing media, it's like, you know, everybody's going to face the microphone. So, like, why don't you ask it? Because you're not even the best player on the team. If Durant says he doesn't want to do it, then, but whatever, I don't care. Like, I don't need to get the quotes from him at the podium and the cliches and all that stuff. That doesn't really do it for me the way it does other people. But I think there's a real story here that we're not getting at, that I think we're going to look at years from now and be like, just what happened there to him mentally? Like, where was he at that time? What prevented him? And injuries have been a part of it too. But we really are talking about one of the great talents we've ever seen at the point guard position, the handles, the scoring ability, like a volcano. If you remember him in Cleveland, like, he would just go on these, what was it? Game five against Golden State, the comeback year. I think him and LeBron both had 40 in that game. So like, he was just a prolific scorer at the level that could match LeBron James. So, like, what happened? Was it mental? Did he go to a bad situation in Boston that just fell apart because of Hayward's injury? And would that have gone better if Hayward never got hurt? Did he just get too within himself mentally and kind of start to second guess everything he does and say, do I have a bigger purpose than basketball, and get too distracted with that? Like, you know, what's interesting about him is some of the stuff they said about Jaylen Brown. You know, is his head too off the court? Is he too smart? Is he overthinking things? That was actually true about Kyrie, it seems.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. But I think the biggest difference is that Jaylen is not as outspoken, you know? And I think the headlines that Kyrie gets, it's like, okay, now you have our full attention. And he continues to do it again and again. It's just kind of like, wait, like, are you, is this your thing now? And I think that's what it is. This ongoing relationship with the media, it just doesn't do him any favors. And then when he said they didn't want to speak to the media altogether, I just think everyone took it as like, well, here he goes again, trying to stir up something before the season even starts, you know?
That's the thing about the media too. And we see it here in Boston, the way the Celtics media is.
Yeah, but Bobby, nowadays it's like, Kyrie, you are the media. Like, you could be, you know, like, you sort of control the narrative nowadays. And if you don't like it, you can change it on social media. Like, I just think nowadays, like, athletes have such a powerful voice that, like, the narrative...
I'm not even talking like that. It's so easy. If you're nice to the media, they're going to be nice to you. And if you're an ass, like, it just brings, like, a reign of terror on you. It's Trump. Like, if Trump, like... was nice in press conferences, it probably would have done a 180 for his, but instead he just dug in and then it brought back stuff on him. And it's not a perfect comparison there, but it's the way the media works. If you're nice to reporters and you work with them, like, it's just going to reflect in their coverage. And then if you're an ass to them, it's just going to bring a reign of terror down on you when stuff comes around that way. Like, that's really how it is. Look at Grant Williams. I mean, the Celtics media loves that guy because he's a big smile and he answers the questions all great. And is that the way it should be? No, but it's the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, it is and it isn't too. I just think you don't have to sort of go out of your way to say things also. You know, I don't think you have to sort of like smile all the time and be a little chipper with the media. But I think what Kyrie sort of struggled with was like maybe being in Boston with so many different other guys who had a voice, maybe not as strong as his, but it was a tough balance of younger guys mixed with the guy who won the championship, you know? So maybe it was so too much of that. I know what's better. I know what's good for you. So just listen to me. And I just, you know, months of that can really get old, you know, regardless of who you are, whether you're Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown.
There were so many guys on that team.
He's not only saying it to them. It's like, you're saying it to the media too. It's like, oh, all right. You know, like,
and that's where that's
being most professional here. Like, you know,
that's where criticism gets warranted too. And again, there's the people out there who defend them to high hell, like, oh, you don't ever have to talk to the media. And like, you know, what have they done for you and this and that, which I guess is true to some degree. But at the same time, I don't think he's above criticism. Like, he has done things in the context of basketball. I'm not saying this guy's a super villain. Right. But like ripping teammates, saying young guys aren't ready, who had just gone to the East Finals without him, you know, leaving LeBron and leaving that team high and dry the next year when they just got smoked almost in the East Finals and then the finals because they didn't have him.
Or I guess LeBron wasn't clutch enough, I guess.
Where did that come from? I didn't hear that.
Like, is that his way of saying, like, yeah, you got that great block on Iguodala, but I hit the shot, motherfucker. Like, are you trying to like say that? It's like, no. I'm the clutch guy. So just in case you thought that that's a huge clutch play, no. Another reminder that I won that for us. It's like, okay, Kyrie. Like,
and there it is
LeBron's
again.
LeBron's not clutch. Like, LeBron's been clutch for over a decade now. I remember when he wasn't. I did.
Is that what it was? The shot, the amount of... We talk about the media. I mean, the media made him out to be a legend off that shot. Like, they did some great things for him coming off that one moment, and he was great in that entire playoff run. But again, it was one playoff run in Cleveland. He had never made the playoffs before LeBron got there. And so did he just get to a level where he said, I can do this on my own? And he clearly did, pushing out to Boston and trying to lead that situation. So I think it's going to be interesting to look back on many years from now and just say what happened, because I don't think it's going to pan out the way it probably should be for him. And you could just say injuries. That Boston run got hampered by his injuries too. If they had him in 2018, they'd probably get by Cleveland to the finals, and who knows what happens from there. So it's a great what-if story with him that I think we could dive upon a little deeper than just going, ha-ha, Kyrie's saying stupid things. And you know, yes. When we get back to it, Chance, I Love My Wife became – Kyrie's flat earth, just the thing he could never get past. And like he hasn't addressed that much over the years, but it all started with that stupid flat earth thing that didn't benefit him at all, was all risk, no reward. Like, there was just nothing good that was going to come from that, especially in the social media age, where I still don't know what he was trying to say. Like, I haven't dug deep enough into it, and it's hard with him because he just puts things out there so vaguely. But I don't know, that's Kyrie Irving. Chance the Rapper, I think we found our comparisons for today. We've been talking forever. I'm going to have to split this up into a couple of things. But Josue Pavone,
let's do it.
The Garden Report, heavy.com for Celtics coverage, and the Causeway Street podcast here on CLNS Media. You can find them in many different areas.
Cedric Maxwell, too, as well, man. Check us out, Cedric Maxwell podcast, definitely.
Yeah, Josue is all over the network. Celtics Nets tonight, when this is going to be heard, Friday. I guess we're not going to be in the building for a while this year. February, March, they're saying, so we'll be doing this at home.
Maybe. We'll see.
And yeah, we'll just see where this pandemic goes. But Garden Report live after every Celtics game here on CLNS live streaming where you're watching this. This has been Dome Theory. Make sure you subscribe, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, all those places. We'll be back next week talking about the music of the year with Mel Smith. We're wrapping this year with some music before we get into the basketball season. I'm Bobby Manning, Josue Pavone. We'll see you next week.
Appreciate you, Bobby.